Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. The News for the Soul Radio Network airs daily, and our archives are always totally free. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading-edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. Back, it's time for In the Healing Light. Normally with Roland Walters, his wife Stacy is here to pick up the torch, and she has a special show planned for you today. Let's get Stacy on to reintroduce herself, her show, and what's up for today. Stacy, welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Nicole. A privilege to be here. Roland and I have had a lot of fun over the last few episodes of being able to really share some things about In the Healing Light. One of the things I feel really strongly about, because I'm actually an attorney, is all about preparing and planning ahead, because those things really make us, I think, feel more at ease in our soul and gives us a peace of mind that's so important that everyone has. So I want to share some of that with the audience today.
Great. The floor is yours.
Great. Thank you. I was doing some reading recently, and there was a 2020 study by caring.com, and it talked about how estate planning is becoming less prevalent. It's really sad. They showed a significant decrease just from 2017 through the present, with people really taking a look and putting plans into place. We were all hit and taken off guard by COVID-19, and that's really where my gut sits right now, is there's such an emotional turmoil because there's so many unknowns. Here we thought maybe this will be short-lived. It hasn't been nearly as short-lived as all of us would like, and I know I've gotten those panic calls saying, are my documents outdated? Will my documents work? Or I don't have any documents. What if something happens to me? And so I really want to try to share with everybody these documents and why it's so important that you have these particular documents. We're going to go over the essentials that every single person should have from age 18 all the way through your life. And I want to emphasize, this isn't a one-and-done deal. One of the most destructive ways to tear apart a family is old documents. You can't just check off that box and tuck it away and pretend like life doesn't change or the laws don't change. Of course, you change your mind too along the way. And those old documents need to be kept current and updated, and they do need to be state-specific to where you're living. So I want to go over those essential documents. What is an estate plan, and how do we really plan and prepare for that unexpected? So paving the way, we're going to talk about your path to preparedness. You know, Benjamin Franklin really hit it on the head with his famous quote that there are only two things in life that are certain, death and taxes. And it's absolutely true. We can't escape either one of those things. And so for us humans, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. I often joke, if we knew our own expiration date, maybe we would be better prepared. Maybe we would really go out and enjoy what life has to offer and fill our souls and our spirits in a way when we knew what that finite period of time was. But instead, we live a life that has been planned out without knowing what that expiration date is. But when we're prepared for that unexpected, whether we leave the earth, whether there is some type of tragedy, maybe a car accident, whether we're stricken by some type of disease, or certainly in this case that we're living right now, the pandemic of COVID, the idea is to have everything in place and have that path paved so that your family can help you and make things simple and easy to avoid all of the turmoil that can happen. You know, one of my famous stories that I love to share is one that's really close to home. My father-in-law, he was a wonderful man. He was a dairy farmer, and he and his wife had a 1968 will drawn up. 2005, he left this earth, and unfortunately, he still had that old 1968 will, and it caused a lot of problems. It caused a lot of problems because so much had changed from 1968 until 2005. The family started fighting. Our mother-in-law lost part of the land that they had worked so hard for, and I never saw it as he wasn't diligent or he put it off. He was a pretty smart, savvy man. It was a matter of having to make priorities. And in life, we get busy. And we just have a tendency to put things that are either more difficult to deal with, and estate planning can be a pretty emotional journey for people, or things that maybe aren't the top priority in terms of how we're going to invest our money and our resources at the time. We have a tendency to put those things off. So, to me, the number one reason why people either don't have a plan in place or they don't have a current plan in place is because of that word procrastination. We all just think we'll get to it sometime. I mean, we're going to live forever anyway, right? And that's not the case. So what in the world is an estate plan? I have people ask me that all the time, and they say, oh, I don't have an estate. All I have is a car, and I have my house, but of course I have a mortgage on it, and I have a checking account, and I have a 401k, and I don't really have an estate. Well, an estate are assets. It's anything that you own, and you may have only one asset in your estate. You may have 25 assets in your estate. Typical assets that are in an estate, of course, any type of banking account, checking, savings, money markets, CDs. You might have things like timeshares. You might have things like life estates in real estate. You might have, of course, vehicles, cars, boats, trailers, trucks, jet skis, mobile homes, airplanes, helicopters. All those things are part of your estate. Some people have things like investment accounts, or also known as brokerage accounts. You might have interest in an LLC, a limited liability company. Maybe you're involved in a partnership, or you've got your own business and it has assets of its own. Sometimes your estate might have shares in a corporation. You might have individually held stocks. You might have stock options from an employer. If you are old school, you might even have some of those good old savings bonds still laying around. What this all amounts to are assets, things that you own. And people cannot access your assets while you're alive. Only you can. And when you're gone, it becomes very cumbersome to try to figure out how do we still access those assets, because you're not here anymore to access those. So those are some of the important things that you have to consider when you talk about an estate plan and what's involved in your estate. It's anything that you own. Now, when you talk about an estate plan, though, it's not just about your assets. There are all sorts of key pieces and documents that should be part of that perfect plan of paving that way so you're prepared for the unexpected. So I have a friend, and she has two boys. They're both off in college. Now, as a matter of fact, I think one was just graduating. And the unexpected happened. One of them was in a car accident. He was over age 18, and she rushed to the hospital, and the doctors wouldn't talk to her, couldn't share blood test results. She wanted to know if there had been a toxicology screen. Was there any drinking and driving involved? all those important decisions and key pieces of information that as parents would want to know, it's off the board, off the table whenever your child turns age 18. And so one of the things that I really push for our parents, it's college time now, our children are getting ready to leave the nest, is make sure that you are prepared with the start of their estate plan. You want to be able to gain access to their medical information if, God forbid, there's any type of illness or tragedy that would happen. You want to be able to do things for them that you could not otherwise do without these essential estate planning documents that we're going to talk about. And so when we talk about an estate plan, it's not only planning for when we're gone, what happens with all of our assets, but it's also planning for what happens if we can't manage our own affairs. Maybe we're incapacitated. Maybe we end up in a condition like Alzheimer's, where our mental faculties begin to leave us and we can't make decisions, even though we might maintain some level of autonomy and independence. So when we talk about that estate planning piece, it's also important to know that they're state specific. So what I mean by that is, and I have a new client, they're from New Jersey, and the first question they want to know is, are my documents from New Jersey good in North Carolina? Anytime you're dealing with what I call disability documents, I'm going to tell you, you have to have not worth the risk of relying on out-of-state documents, and definitely you don't want outdated documents. And so people always ask me, what do you mean outdated? How old do they have to be? And I tell all my clients, they have it in writing, once a year, I want you to take a look at your estate plan. Make sure that everything is still the way that you want it. Nothing in life has happened. You don't have a new grandchild, for example, that has special needs. There hasn't been a divorce in the family. There hasn't been a death or a diagnosis of maybe one of your agents that would cause you to change your estate plan. And so I always tell my clients, once a year, pull out all your documents. I always propose April the 15th because it's the ideal date that we all remember. And we never have great holiday plans on April the 15th. So it's the perfect time to just review everything. When you look at that estate planning from the perspective of, all right, it has to be current, Stacy, I'm hearing you there, but it also has to be state specific. Well, why? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, does it? Well, think about it. All the states have their own laws, their own different rules. And the downside is I can't ever guarantee whoever, whatever entity, might be a bank, it might be the hospital, it might be the doctor, risk management, whoever's looking at your documents, they may not understand or know the nuances of documents that were legally executed in New Jersey, like I told my new client. Do you want to run the risk that if you're on life support, that the hospital is going to decide they cannot comply with your wishes in this New Jersey document because it doesn't appear to meet North Carolina law or because they're unfamiliar with New Jersey law? I wouldn't want to be in that boat for sure where my wishes aren't being followed. So you want to make sure that you always have current documents when you move states for these disability documents. Now, there are four disability documents. The first one is your health care power of attorney. Sometimes you'll hear it called a health proxy. I know that's what they're called in some of our northern states. You need to have an advance directive. That's sometimes called a living will. Most states have done away with our own ability to issue a DNR, do not resuscitate order. Sometimes the states are relying on the doctors to issue particular types of orders dealing with our end-of-life decision. North Carolina has something like that, and it's called a MOST form, M-O-S-T. You have a financial or durable power of attorney. And then the fourth in the disability documents is a HIPAA release, and we're going to cover all of those because these are the documents that every single person that is listening absolutely should have. These documents, they should be state-specific, and if you're over age 18, you should have these in place already. So who needs an estate plan? Everybody. Every single person needs an estate plan, and it really does start with these four documents. I often am asked, I'm a parent of a special needs child who has already gained her angel wings, but my heart understands the difficulties of making decisions for individuals with special needs and for individuals who maybe they're not competent. And so when you look at that scenario, how do you gain control over someone who doesn't have the ability to sign a document? So I have a lovely client. They, husband and wife, came to me, and he had a diagnosis of a particular type of dementia. It was already very apparent to me before they became a client that there were some barriers to his level of communication. She talked a lot for him. He would laugh and try to make a joke, but didn't really provide a lot of input into our journey. And so when I sat down with him, it did become very apparent that he had some competency issues. He was lacking some cognitive abilities that I needed to figure out. Was he competent to sign legal documents? The end conclusion was he wasn't. And when I asked her, I said, well, how are you handling banking transactions? A check comes in for him. Who's signing it? Because she shared he didn't have the ability to sign his name anymore. Oh, well, I'm just signing his name. Okay. And how, if he wants to get money out of the bank or from his IRA or his 401k, how are you doing those things? Well, I'm just signing for him. So it became very obvious that she was going to run into trouble very quickly because he was declining rapidly to be able to help him and navigate some of these things in our everyday world that a lot of us take for granted. When you have someone like that or a special needs loved one, anyone that cannot manage their own affairs, if they do not have these essential estate planning documents in place, these disability documents we're going to talk about, then the only recourse that there is to help that individual out and to gain the legal control, because that's what it is the legal ability to be able to do something for someone, is through what's called a guardianship proceeding. A guardianship proceeding in North Carolina is not a quick and easy process. In fact, through this COVID-19, they have been put on hold unless it is deemed an emergency by the court officer. And so what that means is you go into limbo for the period of time that it takes to petition for a guardianship. The court has to determine whether or not the individual that you are suing in court has that level of ability to still manage their own affairs, or do they need to have a guardian. There's a guardian ad litem from the court that does an investigation. And so not only is it a tedious process, and it's very foreign to most people, of course it's costly, but it's lengthy. And in the meantime, in the 2-3 months that it takes to get through that process, you're in limbo and you're not able to help, which is why these documents are so important and why we have to be proactive in making sure that our young adults are better informed for our parents, peace of mind for sure, and then certainly for us and our families. So let's delve into these four documents. So that first one I was talking about is your healthcare power of attorney. That is a document that never comes into play unless you cannot make your own healthcare decisions. As long as you're competent and you're able to make your own decisions, doctors are always going to ask you what it is that you want. And this is your opportunity to appoint the people that you want to make decisions for you if you can. And so typically, spouse, significant other, children, family members, people who love you, care about you, who really would be able to make good decisions for you, are normally the ones that people will appoint. In terms of that healthcare power of attorney and making sure that you have the ideal people, you do want to ask their permission. You want to make sure that maybe their philosophies and their thoughts are in check too. Imagine this: you were stricken with the coronavirus unexpectedly. This is a story I saw in the news recently. You were put on a ventilator. You were pregnant. The lovely woman had twins, and they are such a blessing. She just got to bring them home, and she spent, I believe, 3 weeks in the hospital on that ventilator. And if you don't have that healthcare power of attorney, people cannot make decisions for you. They can't be your advocate and fight for you, even from afar. Now, healthcare powers of attorney are wonderful. You don't have to be in person. So you can be across the state, across the world, because phones work well, emails work well. There are all sorts of telehealth conferences that can be held. And so for the families who have gone through this completely unexpected and tragic pandemic that has hit our whole world, I can't imagine how frustrating it must have been for those individuals who have a loved one in a facility and they cannot go in there and be with them. They can't see what's going on. They can't ask those questions either face-to-face or electronically because there wasn't a healthcare power of attorney in place. Now get the picture of this, though. It's not a document that's solely end-of-life decisions. We use our healthcare power of attorney constantly throughout our life. For instance, you fall in the parking lot and you break your hip and you have to have surgery. And when you come out of surgery, they ask you where you want to go to rehab. Well, you're looped up on the pain medicine and you say McDonald's Playland. And of course, that's not where we go for rehab. And so the people that you appoint, they're going to be able to talk to the doctors. Of course, they're going to understand what's going on. And so healthcare power of attorney documents, those health proxies are drafted very broadly to give those individuals that you appoint the opportunity to make the best decision that they can, since they will understand what's going on. Now, you can name, by the way, more than one healthcare power of attorney. In fact, I encourage my clients, if you name a spouse, perfect. But make sure and let's name at least one other backup. Well, can we have more than one, Stacy? Of course. So let's say you're not married. Maybe you're widowed or divorced, but you have three children. And they're all busy and they're working and taking care of grandchildren. Why don't we name all three of them? Can we do that, Stacy? Sure we can. Do they have to do everything together? Well, do you want them to? Sometimes it does give a peace of mind to individuals to know that all three of them would be involved in the decision-making. And if that's the case, then we put a clause in there that says majority rules. So all three of them will vote in majority rules. But sometimes it's really important to our clients. Well, if we have all three of them, I'd want them to agree. They need to really hash it out and work together. All right? We'll have them joint. All three of them have to agree on whatever the decisions are. So when you talk about that healthcare power of attorney, because it is drafted so broadly, sometimes there are influences or our own philosophies, sometimes religious beliefs, sometimes just things that either we've seen in life or that have already happened to us in life that cause us to take pause and really want to have not so much of a broad authority given to the people that we're appointing to be our agents to make those decisions. One of the most memorable times that I can recall with signing with a client was a story that she told me. She said she was a young girl, and she was about 11, and she had a brother that was schizophrenic. He was about 17, and she recounted to me how awful and frightening it was for her at such a young age to go with her mom and him when he was having a particular type of therapy. It was a physical testing that really frightened her, and she didn't like what she saw. And so she told me, absolutely no way can ever anyone do that to me. And so you can really limit your powers of attorney to your preferences, but it really takes working with a professional, someone who understands these nuances, who can really hold your hand and walk you through all those choices so that your ideals, your beliefs, your preferences are very clearly spelled out. Because again, when this document comes into play, you're not going to be able to communicate and make those decisions or clarify what it is. A lot of times we see preferences for religious beliefs. So, for example, no vaccines or no blood transfusions. When you have those restrictions in those documents, what it means is that healthcare agent that you've appointed to make decisions cannot grant authority. The only way that any type of treatment could occur if it is restricted is through some type of court order. So that means that if the doctor were very adamant about some type of treatment and you said, my agent shall not have the authority to let the doctor do that, then they could petition the court for an order to be able to do that. But there's some pretty high bars that they would have to overcome before anything like that would happen. Your healthcare power of attorney is a document, too, that really evolves throughout your lifetime. When you appoint agents, you need to revisit it. Of course, the older we get, sometimes we have our own physical problems or we start to have lapses with our memory, and maybe we ourselves aren't suitable to be an agent for someone anymore. Sometimes it's because we've evolved in our lifestyle. So, for example, my wonderful cousin's 18-year-old son is getting ready to join the armed forces. And while he certainly could serve as a healthcare power of attorney, if he's overseas and he's not reachable, then maybe he's not the ideal person to be the healthcare power of attorney. You do want somebody that you can, of course, have access to. But that's always why it's so important to make sure that you have backup healthcare agents in line as well, in case something happens and we are unable to reach that first agent, or if something were to happen. And you should also know that healthcare agents, just because they're named, they don't have to make decisions. They can actually refuse. So if the time comes and your sister thought that she would be able to make those decisions and she can't, and it would then default to your brother, and she could say, nope, I can't do it. And doctors will ask the brother, okay, since you're the next one named, brother, what do you want us to do? So healthcare power of attorneys, we use them constantly throughout our lifetime. They are not end-of-life decisions. They are state-specific documents, and they allow you to spell out your wishes in a way that you can really ensure that peace of mind, that if anything happens to you, somebody is there who can be your advocate and that can make decisions for you. Now, often healthcare powers of attorney, they'll have another component. They'll cover things like organ donation, donating your body for anatomical study. And you want to make sure you understand that in North Carolina, at least, this is an authority that you're giving to your healthcare power of attorney. So what that means is if your healthcare power of attorney sees the need, then they can, for example, donate organs, but they're not obligated. So it opens the door and it instills an authority that if you haven't placed it or expressed it somewhere already, like in North Carolina, we can become an organ donor through our Department of Motor Vehicles by having that designated on our driver's license. It allows your healthcare power of attorney to be able to make those decisions for you as well. Often cremation, autopsies are covered in your healthcare power of attorney as well. I know I have sat with individuals and they say, no way, no how, I do not want to be cremated. Absolutely, that's a conversation that when you're working with your professional with putting your healthcare power of attorney in place, you want to make sure that they have that discussion with you, because if that door is open, then that healthcare power of attorney might have the ability to still have that cremation. But if you restrict their authority, then they won't. We're going to move on next to a companion document that's called your living will. That's your advance directive for a natural death. If you need life support, this is your opportunity to be able to dictate to the doctors and to dictate to your healthcare power of attorney what it is that you would want them to do. That document, the healthcare power of attorney, at least in North Carolina, does have the absolute power to make end-of-life decisions by the authorities and powers granted them in your healthcare power of attorney. That living will, though, usually is executed because we all have our own strong beliefs about if we were at the end of our life, we weren't able to communicate, and we needed life support. We know exactly what we would want the doctors to do, and we know what we want our healthcare power of attorney to do. It's interesting, in North Carolina, we had a significant change in the laws around 2010 or 2012, and that was a point where they became much more specific in spelling it out. Even so specific that the old living wills, which were incorporated in the healthcare power of attorney, they won't hold up anymore. So if you have those old, outdated documents, and even though everybody can see, they checked the box here and it said, no, let me go. They checked the box here and said, no, I want to stay on life support, give me feeding tubes, that sort of thing. They can't follow it. So again, this is another document that when we reach the end of our life, a lot of people feel very strongly about having those last wishes in place. I lost my dad recently in February. This was a document that he did have in place. And personally, it brought a tremendous amount of comfort because I knew exactly what he wanted. I didn't have to guess. My mom and I didn't have to make those hard decisions. I'll never forget sitting with a beautiful woman. Her husband unexpectedly had a stroke, and it left him paralyzed. He could not talk. He had a feeding tube, and he did not have a living will. He had no advance directive. And with tears streaming down her face, she looked at me and recounted exactly how things went over a course of 9 days, how she waited and prayed and hoped that there would be improvement, how she knew he would not want to live the rest of his life as an invalid on a feeding tube, and how awful it was that she had to make that decision, how she really felt just so removed in terms of the love that she had for him, but being so distraught over having to make that decision. But she said when she did, it was such a relief because he passed so peacefully. I don't want that to be a burden on my family. And I'll tell you, the younger you are, the harder this document is to execute. To me, of all the estate planning documents that we do, that is the absolute hardest one to do because we look at our own mortality. And in North Carolina, there are 3 prescribed situations that you're in, and I hold your hand and I walk you through it and I make sure you understand and what your decisions really will mean to make sure that you are making a well-informed decision. But every single time that a client executes this, they tell me how relieved they are to know that their family won't be put in that position like that beautiful woman was with her husband, how they know that this emotional stress has been lifted from their family and that they would leave the earth on their terms, not at a doctor's will and not at their family's will, but on their own terms. So that second super important disability document that's essential for everybody to have is your advance directive or your living will. Now, you all probably all heard of a HIPAA release, Health Information Portability Accountability Act is what HIPAA stands for. And it deals with our federal privacy laws. These came into effect a number of years ago. We sign them all the time when we go to the doctor's office, and it gives permission to the doctors to be able to share medical information with your health insurance companies. If today your husband, for example, called the doctor's office and asked them if you were there on a visit, they couldn't tell them unless you signed a HIPAA release allowing the doctors to share information with your husband. So when you have this HIPAA release, you want to make sure that the doctors can share information with your healthcare power of attorney. Imagine being that agent, the one that has to make decisions when you can't make your own healthcare decisions, and there's no HIPAA relief. There's no clause that says, please share all my medical information with my healthcare agent. I don't want to be the one that's blind and in the dark, not knowing past medical tests, not knowing what past diagnosis they have, not understanding the current results of the test. And so this HIPAA relief that should be in every disability document package allows the doctors and the billing department to be able to talk to your healthcare power of attorney if the need arises. Well, billing department, Stacy, why in the world would we need to talk to the billing department? Well, I'm sure that you're aware of our healthcare costs and increases and rises. We've seen a lot of those across the news, even in more recent times. I saw one recently about a gentleman who went in suspected of having COVID, and they never even tested him, but yet he got a bill for well over $3,000. And he questioned all the why behind it and talked to the billing department. Now, imagine you're in that same boat, but now you're in the hospital and your healthcare power of attorney is the one that's questioning why is this bill so high? And how come the insurance isn't covering it? So when you have that HIPAA relief, your healthcare power of attorney can send that over and talk to the billing department, get the information that they've considered, do things like file an appeal for the denial of the coverage, and they're a very invaluable piece of any estate plan that, unfortunately, a lot of professionals forget about. They don't think about it, but we make sure that they're always in that packet. The last disability document that's super important is called your durable power of attorney. The word durable actually means continuing. It means it's not dependent on whether or not you are competent or incompetent, whether or not you can make your own decisions or not. So it doesn't wax and wane. I like durable powers of attorney because I'm the optimist. And let's just put you out on the cruise ship. So you two were quarantined and you weren't able to come on shore and you're running out of money, or you need to have your tax refund check cashed. That is that durable power of attorney. So you're not incapacitated and you're not incompetent, but you can't carry on your everyday ordinary business. And so this durable, I call it a continuing power of attorney, deals with your financial world. Every single thing that you can do on a daily basis, that's exactly what this durable power of attorney that you would appoint would be able to do. So it's a huge, broad authority. So you better make sure you trust whoever you're appointing. Now, typically, we appoint our spouses to be our first power of attorney. And just like with our healthcare power of attorney, you want to make sure that there are backups in there. And just like we talked about with our healthcare power of attorney, you can have more than one, and you can have it so they all act together, or you can have it so they can act independent, or you can have them so they act in a particular order. The financial power of attorney can do all sorts of things, and it doesn't just deal with your assets. So, for example, I had a client, and her husband had a lease for a vehicle, and he broke his hip. And he was in rehab, and they got to talking, and they wanted to save the money on the lease. And so she wanted to be able to get out of that lease, sign the appropriate paperwork, go ahead and buy it out, and just go ahead and purchase it under the terms of the lease. Without that power of attorney, without that durable power of attorney, she would not be able to do it. But because she had it while he was in rehab, she was able to make that happen. All sorts of things under the durable power of attorney. You can create things like revocable living trust. You can do things like enter into admission contracts for a nursing home. You can apply for Medicaid or Medicare. You can do all sorts of transactions in the banking world, anywhere from write checks, cash checks, tap money out of the IRA, receive the required minimum distribution, all sorts of things. So anything that you can do on a daily basis, that's the authority that is given in that financial durable power of attorney. Now, honestly, when people look at this, they go, oh my gosh, that is a lot of power for somebody to have. And I'm not really sure I'm comfortable with them having it. And I agree, it's a lot of authority for somebody to have. So what I always recommend is they can't do anything without the document. So go ahead and execute it. You have that peace of mind knowing that you're on that path to preparedness if anything unexpected happens, but just don't give it to them now. Some states, they require this durable power of attorney be recorded with the Register of Deeds or on file with the courthouse. North Carolina does not require that anymore, which is wonderful because it is a public document if it's recorded at the Register of Deeds and anybody can pull it up on the internet. However, if it does have to be recorded, then I always recommend waiting until the time comes that you actually need to utilize that power of attorney before you record it. Again, just trying to protect it and keep it safe and keep your affairs private. When we look at that power of attorney, sometimes they can be very limited. So, for example, we certainly have drafted limited powers of attorney that might give somebody the authority to just go and sign for a closing on a house. You might have had that experience. I know my husband and I closed on a piece of property, and the woman who was selling the property wasn't even there, but everything was signed by her power of attorney. You might have those same type of limited powers of attorney when it comes to dealing with the Department of Motor Vehicles, when you're trying to transfer titles on vehicles or renew plates or registration. There are limited powers of attorney that can address just the one single aspect that you want to carve out for whatever reason it is. When you have these financial or durable power of attorneys, it is important that you let the people that you have named, the agents, know where they are. So if the time comes, they know how to find your important documents. Speaking of these disability documents, what should you do with them when they are executed? Well, first of all, you do need to make sure that your doctors have a copy of all your healthcare power of attorneys and your living wills. It is amazing how often those things are not in the health records, and then the unexpected happens, and your family is scrambling. They know you have it. They can't find it. So in North Carolina, our Secretary of State has a deposit bank where you can put those on file. They're accessible by the doctors. Some people, though, aren't comfortable public knowledge, those documents being public knowledge, and maybe they don't want the state having that information. And so if that's the case, I always have a three-prong approach. Number one, every time you go to the doctor, take it with you. The more the merrier, even the dentist and the eye doctor. Number two, keep a copy with you. Make sure there's a copy in the glove box or traveling around with you in your suitcase or a scan on your phone. It'll work perfectly. And number three, make sure that your agents that you've named in there, they have those documents as well. So if the unexpected does happen, they already have one on file too. And then they'll have it to be able to go forward to the hospital and talk to the doctors without any difficulties. Your other documents, your living will, you also should make sure your doctors have those documents. You can put that on deposit as well, potentially with the Secretary of State where you're at, but definitely here in North Carolina. If you're comfortable, you can also put that with your healthcare power of attorney so they know your wishes. I always tell my clients, though, beware of that emotional Pandora's box. If they look at that document, they may not be comfortable with what your decisions are, and it might open up a discussion you have not anticipated. So, of course, you can always share it, but be careful that it might cause some type of emotional Pandora's box. Lastly, the HIPAA release. Just know if you do share that with your healthcare power of attorney or with the doctor's office, that it's immediate and that anybody could call that's named on there and get medical information. So just let them know where to keep your where you keep your important documents. That financial power of attorney, that's the one, though, where I always recommend don't give it up now. Just let them know where to tuck them in, that they always should be kept in a safe in your home. Safety deposit boxes are not ideal places for these important documents. Number one, you're tied to banking hours. Number two, they might be closed for the holiday, for a hurricane, or in this case, a pandemic. They're not allowing foot traffic to come into many of our banks here in North Carolina. And so when you have them at home in a safe, you want to, of course, make sure that it's fireproof and that it's floodproof, but make sure that your important players, your agents there, they know how to get into that safe. You know, back to our 2020 study where we started, over 65% of Americans do not have an estate plan in place, or they don't have a current estate plan in place. It is such a necessity for everybody, and it is an easy process when you're working with the right professional. You want to make sure that you can bond with that professional, that they can talk with you and explain things in a way that you can understand. Not any old lawyer, to me, will do. You want the type of attorney that is caring, one that really will take their time and help you understand everything, that they'll ask you the important questions, help make sure that you've taken all things into consideration. You know, that fear and panic that has stricken our society right now, I've felt it and I've seen it among our seniors because confident that they were prepared for this unexpected. It really caused an emotional upset. Some of my clients have been struggling with getting good rest because of it, and they're very anxious to get these documents in place. And that peace of mind that comes not only for you but for your family, ease of access over your assets, being able to make decisions for you if you cannot make your own, it is the best gift you could ever give your family. And so in times like this, when you start thinking about what are your goals for this next year, make sure that you get on that path to preparedness. Have somebody take a look at your old documents. I'm more than happy to take a look at any North Carolina documents. I'm licensed here in North Carolina. I do have partners across the state, across the country, and we hold licenses in several states. My firm is Thomas Walters Law Firm. It's Thomas Walters Estate Planning.com. There are 5 partners, and we have other attorneys that work with us. Check out our website at www.twestateplanning.law. That's twestateplanning.law. We have all sorts of resources and blogs there. You can reach out to us for a document review. We do offer free consultations. I know how important this is. It is a love of my life and is one thing that I will beat my banjo to for a long time, or beat my drum, I guess, not my banjo. I want to thank Nicole for the privilege of being able to host this today. I hope that I will be back in a couple of weeks to continue to start thinking about the things that they need to think about, because there's, you know, one thing for sure in life, death and taxes, but we don't know what we don't know, and we need to make sure that we learn along the way so we can make the best perfect plan for our family, to make things simple and easy, remove that fear and anxiety, and make sure that we're prepared for the unexpected. Blessings to everyone, and stay safe and be well. Thank you. Again, this is Stacey Walters. God bless.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.